Hello, and welcome to Season 8 of the Canadian Women's Foundation podcast, All Right, Now What? Gender equality and justice, where we live, work, learn, and play, is the goal, and it makes life better for everyone. All Right, Now What? Remains a space where we ask, how do we move from awareness to action? But this season, we're also shifting the story. Through powerful storytelling, expert interviews, and bold conversations, we'll explore what true equity can look like, especially for those who are too often silenced or overlooked. The work of the Canadian Women's Foundation and its partners takes place on traditional First Nations, Inuit, and Métis territories. We are grateful for the opportunity to meet and work on this land. However, we recognize that land acknowledgements are not enough. We need to pursue truth, reconciliation, decolonization, and allyship in an ongoing effort to make right with all our relations.
Hi, I'm Shagani Hampuram from the Canadian Women's Foundation. Today, we're joined by professional soccer player, social activist, and global advocate Furkana Mutaj, whose leadership on and off the pitch has made her a powerful voice for girls and young people. In our conversation, Furkana reflects on her family's refugee roots, and how the sport of soccer became a doorway to community and purpose. She shares why access to sport is about navigating social barriers, inequities, and the realities many young people face. And finally, Furkana offers insights on how we can champion inclusive sport environments and support young girls who are too often left on the sidelines.
Well, welcome, Furkana. So excited to have you here. I do want to start by letting the audience know how I know you, because I feel it's so relevant to why I was so excited to invite you to be a guest on the podcast and what we're going to be talking about today. So back in October, the Canadian Women's Foundation, we did our first collaboration event with Generation Women Canada in Calgary, and it was a generational storytelling event. And so we were looking for folks in Calgary, and a lot of people were recommended to us. And we were very excited when your name came across as part of our Team 20 storyteller. I remember me and Jen were hoping that we can lock you in because we read a bit about your story. I tried really hard not to Google you. There's lots of, you know, things you've done that's out there, but I was so glad I didn't, because when I heard you speak at the event, and I think lots of people felt that way hearing you, they were really moved. They found, your experience very powerful, and just the maturity and like the life you've lived for somebody who's in their 20s is just, you know, I was telling Deep this before we started this conversation. So I'm really excited for folks to hear more about you and the wonderful work you're doing, because there's such an overlap with the Canadian Women's Foundation in terms of gender equality in the world of sport. So speaking of that, let's get into your journey a bit, because you were the captain of the Afghanistan's women's soccer team, and currently you play for Calgary Wild FC. Can you tell me a bit about your journey into becoming a professional soccer player? Did you always know that you wanted to be a professional soccer player? Did you imagine that this could be your life?
So I grew up in Toronto. I came to Canada when I was 2 years old, immigrated here. I'm originally from Afghanistan. My parents come from a refugee background. And so growing up in Canada, I was extremely grateful for all the resources and supports that we had at our disposal. And I really wanted to leverage that, because I knew other girls around the world didn't have access to the same opportunities I did. So my goal was always to make sure that academically and athletically that I would really progress in my career. And my parents were extremely supportive as well, making sure that we were involved in extracurricular activities, sports, both structured and non-structured as well. And so I ended up playing rep soccer in Scarborough. So that's where I was originally from. For Wexford Soccer Club, did really well, kept progressing, played for Vaughan, and then moved on to York University and was recruited to be a varsity student athlete there. And I was studying kinesiology and health sciences. And that's when I actually began to realize that sport is so much more than the physiological and psychological aspect of the game, or biological aspect rather. And, you know, a lot of kids can't access sport because of the psychosocial or other issues that they might be facing. And so that's when I realized that sport is so much more than a game, and specifically soccer and football. And so I went on to do teachers college, did that for 2 years, was still a varsity student athlete at the time. And we actually didn't have a professional women's soccer league in Canada. So there was a semi-professional league called League One Ontario, and I competed in that. But since I was a kid, I wanted to play professionally. I just didn't know how to. And so during university, I did get called up to the Afghanistan women's national team. That was a huge honor on its own. I honestly did not even know we had a national program, but then they had hired American coaches. They were really investing in women's sport, and it was a great time for me to get involved. And I'm so glad and honored that I've represented my nation. And so it was like I was a national team athlete, but then domestically, I wasn't playing professionally. I was playing varsity. I was a varsity student athlete, which is the highest level of sport in Canada for soccer at the time, women's soccer. And so when I graduated from teachers college, naturally, I was like, I want to be a professional footballer, but there's no avenue here at home. And I had heard of stories of people going abroad as well, but they were barely making anything. And it was really hard for them to make ends meet. And it just wasn't the standards that were required. I think the not having a European passport makes it very difficult for Canadians to go over to Europe and play. And so I thought that, you know what, I'm going to be a teacher. I am going to coach. And I was coaching OPDL, which is a very high level here. I was a varsity coach as well, assistant coaching York University. And 3 weeks into my first teaching contract, I ended up evacuating the Afghan youth national team, which I'll get into. But that was actually when I moved to Portugal and just was reminded that this is something that I want to do. I want to play professional football. You know, it's so big, and I realized that my impact was so much greater on the pitch than it would ever be in the classroom for my community. And so I told myself, I'll always come back to the classroom, but I'll never be this young to play professionally. And I'm glad that I ended up doing that and stayed in Europe and played there until the NSL was created. And I wanted to be a part of history right from the beginning and play for Calgary Wild FC. It's funny because I'm originally from Toronto, and I had lived in Portugal, Turkey, and the Netherlands before this. And everyone wonders, well, why didn't you play for Toronto? Toronto is a great team, of course, as we know. They won the league. But I am a community ambassador and a footballer at Calgary Wild FC. And their vision and mission around what I would do really aligned with me. And so I am, you know, very lucky to be able to get the best of both in this role.
So many wonderful things. And you touched on so many things that we will dive deeper into. I did want to say, I forgot that you grew up in Toronto. I grew up in Scarborough too. I was wondering, and we'll talk about that when you talk about the Scarborough Simbas, if that's sort of where that came from. And I also went to York. I went to Schulich at the business school. So just lovely connection there that I forgot that you were from Toronto. So you did mention the evacuation. So I do want to talk about that. So following the 2021 Taliban takeover, you were a central figure in helping to evacuate the Afghanistan girls soccer team. You were so kind to share that as part of your story at the Generational Women event. You don't necessarily have to reshare it again, because I know it's quite an intense and heavy story. But I am curious how that whole experience impacted you, and even all your advocacy initiatives to follow, how that shaped you.
Yeah, of course. So in 2021, I had just graduated from university. And in that summer as well, in August of 2021, August 15th to be exact, the Taliban had gained control of the country. And we were actually, as a national team, preparing for the Asian Cup qualifications that would have happened in September. So I was fully in contact with the Football Federation over that summer, and they were planning the training camp and so on. And so it went from a ton of communication, and I was also watching the news, so I was aware of what was happening. So I kept asking them if they were sure that we were going to compete, and considering what's currently happening in Afghanistan, if the circumstances were made it permissible for even us to compete at the world stage. And they were like, no, don't worry. Afghanistan will not be taken over. We're safe in the capital. And so I was like, okay. So I went from a ton of communication to zero communication for a week. And naturally, I got really nervous until I got a phone call from the Afghan Football Federation when the Taliban had gained control, asking me to help evacuate the national team players and the young girls because their lives were at risk. The Taliban had come into the office, asked for sensitive material, and their identities were quite clear because they were active in the community. And in Afghanistan, just playing sport makes you an activist in its own right, which puts you at risk. And so I had no clue what to do at the time. I was at home. I mean, I wasn't literally at home, but I was at my job. I was actually working at the Ability Center when I received that call in Whitby. And I had no clue what to do. So I started to call humanitarian lawyers and organizations and individuals and community groups that I felt that could support me on this mission. But unfortunately, I didn't get the responses that I was looking for. And so finally, I was able to get connected to ex-intelligence officers from the United States and individuals within the White House. And that was transformational for me because I sat on a Zoom call, shared the sensitivity of everything that was happening, what was required, the amount of families and individuals that we needed to evacuate immediately. And they were willing to support me, but made it clear that I had to be at the forefront of this. And so there is a WhatsApp documentary on this. I would actually really encourage people to watch it because it's more detailed. It's in my Instagram bio, the link. But essentially, for over a month, we worked 24/7, day and night, to be able to pull this off in a time where there was no commercial flights leaving the country. All the borders were closed. There were Taliban checkpoints throughout the country and just sheer chaos. And the only country that was able to provide asylum was Portugal, and they were kind enough to support the family members as well. Other countries stepped up, but they only wanted to support the young girls and not their family members. And so we didn't want to split them apart, of course. And when we evacuated them to Portugal, mind you, I was 3 weeks into my teaching contract. And throughout this whole time, right, I had a full-time summer job. I had to quit that because I had to really focus in on this mission. I was playing football still. I was still coaching. I had my own nonprofit organization that I was directing and putting really everything on hold because I had to work on the Toronto time zone, the American time zone, the Afghanistan time zone, the Portuguese time zone, and make sure things worked out. And then finally, when we got them to Portugal, I was asked to basically invited to go over to surprise the families because of all the hard work that had happened. I was only supposed to be there for 3 days. While I was there, they asked me to continue to extend my stay because of how vulnerable the families were in that moment and how much they trusted me. And so I kept extending my stay to the point where they asked if I can live in Portugal, help build a resettlement plan for the families and support. And that's exactly what I did. It was a tough decision at the time in the sense that I had just started my career in Toronto and it was just 3 weeks in. I was like, how do you tell a school board 3 weeks in that you're not going to return to the role? And so I did that from Portugal, ended up living there, supporting them from coaching and everything else. And while I was there, we actually advocated for another flight of Afghans, footballers and their family members to come over as well and resettle those family members too. And when we were there, we were invited by a lot of football clubs and we were really exposed to like the European style of football and everything that it offered and the professionalism of the sport because we didn't have it here in Canada. And that's when I was like, oh my God, this is something that I want to do. I want to do this. I've always wanted to. This is my opportunity to show because the girls that we had evacuated, they saw me as a huge inspiration and role model, but they also didn't believe that a player from the Afghanistan national team can play at the highest levels of the sport. And I wanted to prove them wrong because I knew I was capable and I know we all are capable. And so I did that to be a source of inspiration, but also to make sure that I am living to my potential as well. But I didn't want to lose sight of the power of sport. And so I vowed to myself that I would continue to use sport as a force for good and support underserved communities and refugee communities through that. And so I ended up living in a few different countries, playing professionally there until the NSL happened and I returned back. But I think what I learned throughout that whole process is, first of all, it had aged me 30 years. I had learned so much, gained so much insight. And I think it's one of those unique experiences where school will never teach you any of that. And I was just like thrown into circumstances, learned about things maybe a little too soon. And unfortunately, the dark side of politics as well. But what I learned through that experience is that action is what drives change. I could have, when I received that phone call, I could have said, why would you ask me? I'm not a politician. I'm not in the government of Canada. What do you really think that I can do? But I think sometimes we have to actually dream big and take little steps that will open doors up. And when I first got that phone call, did I think that this was going to be possible? Probably not. But I knew that I had to do something. And when you do something, that's when things work out for the better. So yeah, action drives change. Don't underestimate your impact for sure.
I love that. I was literally just going to repeat that. Action drives change. And, you know, I've heard this story obviously before. It still remains so powerful and resonating. And, you know, I was going to mention that you share that, and I'm sure you've had to tell this story a lot and it's part of your life, but it is quite a burden to have taken on at such a young age and, to your point, sort of thrown into it. I admire and respect so much that, you know, yeah, your belief in knowing that this is the thing that you wanted to do, despite not necessarily being the position that was setting you up to win. So I commend you for that. But I also want to acknowledge how hard that must have been. And yeah, I appreciate sort of how thoughtful you were in thinking about, you know, realizing the reality of the role you play for some of these young people, seeing someone like you who looks like them, and seeing the possibilities, which leads me to, you know, your other work, which you talked about, you know, using sport, the power of sport. And you are the co-founder and director of Scarborough Simbas, which is a nonprofit organization that uses sport to support newcomers and refugees in Canada on their settlement journey. Can you tell me more about how that works and how that came to be, and sort of what is the impact you're seeing from the work that you do there?
Yeah, so Scarborough Simbas was built during COVID-19, actually. And that's when we established it. At the time, during COVID-19, I was in teachers college. I was playing as a high performance athlete. I was coaching as well as a high performance coach. And we continued through the pandemic with restrictions. And I just saw how affected and impacted these young kids were. But on top of that, I realized that grassroots soccer, nonprofit organizations, the ones that necessarily didn't have the funds to be able to pay for sport, didn't have sport. And all of that was put on hold. And the refugee and newcomer community, their mental health was deteriorating just as much as everyone else's was, if not more, because there were some supports by the government at the time. But when you're a refugee and newcomer and you've just settled in the country, you don't have that background to be able to even qualify for those supports. And so I couldn't imagine what they were going through and some of the challenges. And so that's when I decided to co-found Scarborough Simbas to help support and alleviate some of the hardships that they were going through the game. And so it started off very humbly. We got a very small grant initially and had 50 kids sign up in Scarborough. And the intention was to do it in Scarborough for many reasons. They have a huge refugee and newcomer population in Scarborough, a very diverse community. I think a lot of low resource and underserved communities within there. But I also grew up there. When we moved to Canada, I spent my first 18 years of my life there and then moved on to Bowmanville, Ontario. But my connection to Scarborough still remains very much, you know, just I'm just as connected as I was when I lived there. And so we had 50 kids sign up. I think that was the best summer that they've ever had. And it's completely free sport. So the way we function is, at the time, was once a week, camp style, 9 to 12:30. You would come in the morning, and it would be outdoor, of course, because it was the summer. You'd come in, grab a little breakfast and some snacks. We'd have a community circle, do a check-in, more so focused on mental health. And then we would go into activities, connecting with other kids, and then finally play some soccer and have some games and really enjoy from that perspective. And then we would end off with a community lunch. We knew that many of these kids don't have access to the most nutritious meals at this time, and we would make sure that they were fully fed and were able to provide them with grocery gift cards as well to go home with, and transportation costs were also covered, so bus costs. And that was that was a defining moment for them, I think, as well, because it's the first time that they really felt valued in Canada. And it really helped them as well, because we had an influx of Syrian refugees come in. And I know there was a lot of great programs to support them, but there were no programs really where you had high performance coaches that they saw themselves reflected in and had the experience. I think a lot of times when we have these organizations, we just assume that let's put unqualified coaches with these underserved communities, but they got the best of the best of the quality coaches, uniforms, kits, everything that they needed. And from there, we just continued to grow. So over the last 5 years, we've supported over 200 families, which has been quite substantial. We've grown our programming as well. So we no longer just do summer program. We have summer, fall, winter. We have girls only and boys only programming because we start off with co-ed. We still have our co-ed program as well. So we've really grown. And that's all thanks to amazing directors and staff members that we do have, because mind you, 2 years into that, 3 years into that project, that's when I moved abroad. But that's also when we had incredible individuals and staff members step up and transform this into something so much bigger.
I heard so many wonderful things in there, because what I love about the program is the wraparound supports. And again, this idea, I love what you said about just quality, just because, you know, and again, I grew up in Scarborough, so I very much understand this idea of underserved communities. And then what that tells a young person, especially when, you know, certain programming doesn't come into the area and certain quality of programs. So I love that. And thinking again about the wraparound supports, making sure that they can get there, making sure they have a meal and just a sense of community. I love the idea of a community lunch as well. This leads me in general, because, you know, very on theme where you mentioned the power of sport, and how I think about it all the time when you think about major sport events and how people of very different backgrounds can get together in a room and you're watching a game and it doesn't matter where you're from, where you grew up. It's sort of, you're united by this thing. And it's the same with arts and music. And so I think sport very much has a very powerful effect. But the role of girls is often, you know, we often see men and sports in kind of these big venues and arenas and people paying tickets for. And, you know, there's a lot more for women and girls to kind of have that opportunity. And so I would love to hear from your experience. And you already touched on this, but especially we know from the Canadian Women's Foundation with our own girls programming, it starts quite young, unfortunately, that girls either stop playing sports, start to get conscious about their body, are not even encouraged as sports as a part of development, which I'm sure you can, from your own experience, know how important that is. So can you talk about what, in your experience, whether from your own personal journey or through your work, what do you see as the benefit of girls being participating in sports like soccer? And what do you see as barriers for participation here in Canada?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many incredible benefits to staying in sport. And I think a lot of people, I can speak to the newcomer community more so, because when a lot of families come to Canada, they come for economic opportunities or they were forced out of their country. But playing in sport doesn't necessarily fit the mold of their vision of their kids in Canada, because for them, it doesn't lead to anything. If you don't become a professional athlete, that means the investment wasn't worth it. And I'm trying to really change that narrative and help individuals understand that no, sport is there to help you build transferable life skills, build discipline, time management, the list goes on, so that you are prepared for the real world, whether that is being a professional athlete or not. We know that 90% of C-suite female executive leaders come from a sporting background. So it gives you a competitive edge, you know, that you are this individual that is prepared for any storm that is going to come. And so that's the way I like to frame it for the newcomer communities. But I completely understand it's extremely expensive. So some of the barriers that exist are ridiculously expensive. And that's not even high performance sport only. Even simple structured summer camps or, you know, nonprofit organizations that unfortunately sometimes have to charge these families a base fee in order to continue to operate. But if you have a few kids, that just becomes unaffordable as well. So the barriers that exist are financial for sure. It, depending on where you live as well, like transportation and getting to and from those community clubs or organizations as well. One of the biggest barrier, unfortunately, is parents and cultural norms and I guess misunderstandings about what sport actually is meant to do and how women can get involved in the benefits of it. Growing up, I every team I competed on, I was the only racialized girl. And, you know, I had a Black teammate as well, actually. I should mention, I would have like a Black teammate, and I grew up in Scarborough. It was like pretty much Caucasian and then two of us. And that's not to say other girls didn't want the opportunity or maybe didn't have the talent, but they just didn't have access to it. And I still see it to this day. Like now that I'm in Calgary, I actually had a visit two nights ago to a community club here in central Alberta. And the dropout rates, like you mentioned, by adolescents, 2/3 of girls drop out of sport for a variety of reasons, the first being that it's not fun anymore. But I went out to central Alberta. They had a bunch of young girls coming out and playing, and I visited them as part of my wild role. And one coach came up to me. She was about 16, 17 years old. She told me she's in grade 12. And I was like, oh, I heard you're really good, because the other coaches kept telling me she's a good player. I was like, I heard you're really good. Where do you play? Do you play at this club? And she's like, actually, unfortunately, my team folded last year because we don't have enough girls to create a team. But I also am getting recruited to a university in the States. But that just means that I won't be prepared because I can't train and compete and play in games. And so that's the unfortunate reality, how it affects so many people very differently. One thing that I definitely want to do and am doing actively is trying to make sure that those avenues exist for refugee and newcomer communities, for underserved communities. Free program is something that needs to be done. Affordable programming has to be done. And so it's just figuring out how to be able to support those communities in a way that actually serves them. And then also making sure that you are providing parent education around the benefits of it. If your parents don't support you, unfortunately, you're not going to go very far in anything for that matter.
I didn't know about that C-suite stat. And, you know, you saying that brings up so many memories for me, because I played sports throughout, school, university, and, you know, even if it was just recreationally and it wasn't, you know, I wasn't at a professional level, I can see so many of the benefits. And you talked about this earlier, and I'm thinking about it now, which is the importance of the things you learn outside of school from the actual classroom. Because you're right. I think there's so many things from being in a sport, especially a team sport environment, whether it's social skills, self-confidence, and even health. Like I think about being much older now, how easier it is for me to pick up a physical activity because I have such that experience and comfort level, and understanding that, you know, it's part of your health too, just to be able to be comfortable and move your body and have a relationship with your body. So hopefully we're going to end this podcast on what I consider a hopeful note, because I always just wonder, especially with the state of the world and, you know, reading headlines after headlines, and there's not always positive news or always signs of progress. What keeps you hopeful and what keeps you motivated to do this work?
What keeps me motivated is my intention behind it. So believe it or not, I grew up without social media. I got social media in 2021 when I graduated from university. And that's when I was actually forced to make a social media, because my family members, friends were like, you're doing such great work in the community. No one ever knows. And you're not inspiring anyone in your bedroom. And so I was like, okay, I understand where you're coming from, but my intention is not for the world to know what I'm doing, but to actually serve those communities. And they said, yeah, but you can maximize your impact by the power of social media. So that's when I created it. So every time, you know, I'm going through challenges or difficulties or maybe successes, I always remember that the intention behind it is to make sure that one individual, I can change one individual's life, hopefully, to then move on to inspire others and kind of have that ripple effect. I think naturally what ends up happening is you have a greater impact than you even think. But for me, it's always been one person at a time. If I can help one individual who can then help someone else, that's the most important message I can leave individuals with. And I always say this quote or stat rather, that there's 8 billion individuals on this earth. And if each one of us supported one individual and passed that forward, then we would have exponential change in this world. So just don't underestimate your impact. Start off small. Everyone wants to do the next biggest thing, but is not prepared to just support one person. And so let your impact be felt.
And that's beautiful. And you know, even when you're saying change in one person's life, you know, and we know this again through the work that we do, it's not just that person's life you end up impacting, it's the people around them. And that has that ripple effect. And I think it's a beautiful reminder to your point, where again, in a time where it feels like people individually may not feel like they can do a lot, but even turning to your neighbor, someone in your community, a friend, and just doing what you can there, it's that ripple effect of all of us doing something, because it's, to your point, better than doing nothing.
Thank you for helping shift the story on safety, leadership, justice, power, and rights. You can visit CanadianWomen.org today to learn more and stay connected. We believe everyone should be able to exist without fear of harassment or abuse. You can help make that a reality. Text SAFE, S-A-F-E, to 20222 to give $10 and support women, girls, and gender diverse people throughout Canada. Small actions can lead to big changes. We appreciate your support.